Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm the post-midnight rambler, Scott, and ambling over to join me once again this week, a shoot-em-dead brain bell jangler if there ever was one, it's Jamie.
Hi. Hey, hi, Jamie. Scott. Glad to be back.
I warned you just moments ago. By the way, my introduction is going to make no sense. Not only won't it probably make any sense to you, and if you actually did get what I was referencing, I'm very impressed. I don't know why I chose that for the intro. It was just in my head the other night. It's like, oh, that's going to be the intro. Probably none of our listeners are going to know what I'm doing either. I'm quoting lines from a Rolling Stones song for some reason, which it's not like they were featured in this episode. It was just in my head. Anyway.
Weirdest. Sometimes you just got to go, you know, you got to hit when inspiration strikes.
I think I just had the word or phrase Midnight Rambler in my head the other night, which had nothing to do with a Rolling Stones song. I mean, I like the Stones. They're fine, but they're not my favorite band by, you know, not in my top 20 bands. And all of a sudden I said, hey, you know what? I should make that the opening. I don't know why. If this is back in the day where we didn't care about using unlicensed music, I probably just would have used the song. I don't know. It's just in my head. Anyway, we are here to talk about, not that, I'm sorry that everyone just got really confused. Like, what kind of podcast is this? Why are we listening to this crap? No, you're here to listen to us talk about the latest episode of The Boys. And it's an episode that everybody who knew about it has been waiting for, not just for weeks. People who are fans of the comic have been waiting for years for this, to see, are they going to do it? How are they going to do it? How are they going to get away with that? Of course, I'm talking about Herogasm, which was the sixth episode of season three. Jamie, beyond my referencing it in a previous podcast or two, did you know anything about Herogasm going into this episode?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't. I haven't read in the books or anything. I've heard chatter, but I've never actually saw it with my own two eyes.
And to be clear, and I'll talk a bit more about it once we get into the actual episode. It wasn't exactly a quote unquote faithful adaptation of what happened in the comics. It's very different, in fact, but I was fine with that because, A, I wasn't like an avid reader of the comic. I read a few here and there, but I happened to read that specific issue. And I felt, you know what? It still is in the, let's say, it's still in the same spirit of what happened. And there are certain things that, you know, that are in both, absolutely. There's one thing that is absolutely not in both. I don't even know if I'll tell you guys what that is too, if you haven't heard about it yourself. But that's much later in the episode. We are going to kind of go through this one beat by beat. And considering how power packed this episode was, we thought the previous one was packed. This one. But I think we have a bit more to talk about with this one.
Yes.
A lot more fun stuff to talk about. That's for sure. Like the opening. And by the way, have you noticed they've been really doing very interesting openings for every episode this season? They always seem to be something like a separate little piece before the actual episode. I think almost every episode has been that way just about, or it's felt that way at least. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not that the show's ever lacked in creativity, but you can see it kind of pushing in some different wind this season.
Yeah, I mean they've done things where we've watched you know an old clip from a show or a movie or whatever that's involving the cast, whatever. Here, now I'm sure many of you out there will recall probably one of the most embarrassing celebrity related things in recent years. I believe it happened just a little ways into what, you know, we'll call it the COVID crisis, if I'm not mistaken. And that was when a bunch of celebrities, I guess via Zoom calls and such, and maybe they pieced together, you know, iPhone recordings and God knows what else, when they all got together to do some rendition of Imagine. I remember, I think Gal Gadot was spearheading it or something. It's like, oh Lord. It was one of those things that if you watched it, you were like cringing, like, oh, who thought this was a good idea? There have been good ideas. There was that thing that all the actors and celebrities did where they all acted out like a minute of The Princess Bride and they pieced it all together. That was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Track that down on YouTube, guys, if you've ever seen it. It's really fun. You can only watch it in little pieces, but it's really fun. But the Imagine thing was like, it fell into the "this is why they hate us" category.
This is why we can't have nice things, guys. Oh, man.
This is why we can't have respect for celebrities anymore. So you gotta love that they totally send it up here on The Boys. Kudos, first and foremost, to all the celebrities who took part in this. And I will be honest, I actually wondered for a hot minute there, wait, did all these people do it for The Boys episode, or did they maybe take clips from the actual recording from a couple years ago? And the more I thought about it, I realized, oh, wait a minute, these all have to be new. There's no way they could have done that. I mean, Patton Oswalt is like, the celebrity geek du jour. I mean, I think he's part of every single comic book universe at some point now.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it was really weird because just coincidentally that day, Patton Oswalt came up in conversation like three different times, like in separate conversations I had with people. So as soon as his face was on the TV singing to me, I lost it.
Nah, it was so good. And I believe the implication, if I recall, because so much other things happened in this episode, that opening is almost like a faint memory to me. And I think, have I used the phrase spearheaded? I'm going to use it again. Was this spearheaded by the Deep? Because it feels very much like something the Deep would do. It was very Deepish. Oh, and probably giving the thumbs up by his wife there, too.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Okay, so we get into the actual episode. Once we get beyond that little showpiece at the beginning, right off the bat, we settle a question that maybe I'm the only one who had from the previous episode, and that was my question. I was wondering if Homelander knew that it was Soldier Boy or not.
Right.
Pretty clear when you watched it a second time, which I did. It was like, oh, no, he didn't know. But anyway, in this episode, they're with the Deep over in Crime Analytics. Because apparently the Deep is the only remaining, practically the only remaining employee in Crime Analytics.
There's no one left.
I think there was that one other girl, one other woman.
Yeah, the candy bar share.
I don't know if she's still there or not.
She's out of there now.
So they're looking at footage from, just before the explosion happened. And that's when you see and you realize that he recognizes who it is. From the explosion at the trailer park, I should be more clear, when Crimson Countess gets killed. Fried, as I like to say. what I thought was interesting about it, and there's nothing less interesting than the word interesting, by the way, in a podcast. But so I love that I use that or literally way too much. I didn't anticipate what his reaction was going to be. Because I don't know if up to this point, if we were clear, whether these two, I don't know if they would have known each other, but also I don't know if we know when did Homelander first come to be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just the fact that we got to, find out that it's who he looked up to, it was like his idol.
And I know
we didn't really have any of that.
Right. And I know there are some out there who will say, well, of course he wouldn't have been at the same time. That was back in the 80s and he's, however old he should be now. But this is like probably this takes place in present day, whatever. My whole thing would be, yeah, but he's like their version of Superman. He could just simply not really be aging anymore, much like Superman. It really doesn't really age after a certain point, at least as far as the comics are concerned.
And we don't really have to, like with Noir, it's not like we see his face. So it's like there's no comparison there. So
right. And the fact that we know that Noir was around at the same time also would lend to the possibility that, Homelander would have been around at the same time. It's something that I don't if it was made clear, I am simply not recalling it, that they gave us a specific year when he came to be Homelander. I might be forgetting something. It's not really relevant at this point, I guess, anyway, because they pretty much spill everything else out for us. But I just thought it was interesting. But what's interesting is that he seems to be more concerned about how this is going to affect the Vought Corporation and his standing there, and which is also his plan, more than anything else. I thought that it was kind of an odd reaction, because I felt like he really is taking the role of, like, Stan Edgar to heart.
Right. Here.
Because that's, you know, the way a corporate tycoon would be thinking, not someone who's just overcome with, you know, he is the super ego, if there ever was one. But, I mean,
but it would stand to reason that his number one fear, really, like the first fear, I mean, if we were to be really honest about him and his character, his first fear when he finds out this person exists again is they're going to steal the limelight.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right.
So it stands to reason that he's going to try to put all hands on deck and control with Vought, because that's where, you know, that's the source he plugs into as of right now. That's his access to the limelight.
Right. Yeah, that totally does make sense. And if you want to couple that with the fact that you can see or tell that he has... I mean, he doesn't have the mindset of a CEO. It would be odd if he did, actually. But there's a certain hypersensitivity, because he doesn't want anyone. He basically, a lot of ways, Homelander is still like a bratty kid.
Yep.
And I kind of, in a weird way, as horrible a creature as he is, it's something that maybe some of us, myself included, can even relate to. Like, we don't want to look bad. We don't want to be made to look like we're dumb.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. That's really what it comes down to. He doesn't like people thinking that they're smarter than he is. Mm-hmm. He's always going to be the strongest person in the room. He wants to be the smartest person in the room. And he can't stand it that time after time he hasn't been. I think that was a big issue with him and Stan Edgar. Stan Edgar was clearly the smartest guy in the room between the two of them. And he took him down. Because he's trying to prove that he's just as he can be, in his mind, he can be just as smart as anybody else. Even though when he had that boardroom meeting and that one specific person started spouting all those different things, jargon and everything that he really wasn't familiar with, and you could see how he was having the twitch thing was happening, whatever. I kept thinking, oh, she's gonna get fried. She's gonna get fried, but it didn't happen. But so you have that at play as well. But again, these are all, everything is about his ego and him, whether it's him being able to control the situation, because all of a sudden this is just an unexpected monkey wrench, especially once he realizes it's Soldier Boy, even if he hasn't ever encountered it himself, the fact that we know that someone he looked up to, he knows that he's a powerful character, a powerful hero, powerful whatever, creature. So that's something that might conceivably be intimidating to him, because right now there isn't another, you know, soup around that can take him down. We don't know the story with Soldier Boy. Maybe we know that he's this universe's version of Captain America, but my impression is, it's like Captain America, but maybe a whole lot stronger.
Yeah.
And now that he seems to have this other ability that he acquired, you know, from the testing with the Ivans, where he's basically blowing shit up. Anyway, let's talk about Soldier Boy, because there's a lot to talk about with this character. Okay.
The man enjoys a crushed pill, I'll tell you.
Oh, my God. Because when we catch up with him, he's in a motel room. And it's interesting, we realize when they're in the motel, I guess it's Huey and him, and then Butcher shows up shortly thereafter, that they haven't actually struck the deal yet. Of him, you know, them basically using him to take care of Homeland. And that hasn't been done as of yet. They have to basically, this is where we have to convince, they have to convince him to do it. But yes, the snorting the crushed amphetamine. That was something. And also, there's some priceless lines in the scene when you realize just how much of a man out of time he is. I mean, That's always a fun joke gag to go with whenever you have a character like that. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong or if you see it differently, whereas that's kind of a funny thing when you're dealing with characters like, you know, like, say, like Captain America in the MCU movies or something, or any other time travel thing. But most things we've seen of that nature don't tend to be a hard R.
Right, right.
And then usually the time traveling character isn't sort of kind of a little bit of a scumbag.
Sort of kind of a little.
Yeah, he's not a great guy. But I think, isn't it in this scene where I think Huey spouts all those terms at him? And he's like, you're making
it. Yes, like internet. Yes. GPS, internet.
Yeah, I remember GPS, internet. I think there was something else in between him. I'm, oh, man, if he'd only said tweets. Maybe he did. I don't remember. Didn't take notes on that. But it's during this scene you realize that he precedes Homelander, that his only awareness of Homelander is the fact that he knows him from, like, the different murals and posters that he's seen since he escaped from Russia. I know I didn't mention when we talked about the last episode. And it's more Easter eggy, so that's why I don't really care that I didn't mention it. But it came up in conversation when I was talking about this episode the other day, so I thought I'd mention it. During the scene in the previous episode, when again, it's the Captain America walking around the city and seeing how different everything is seen.
Yeah, right?
You know, like the guys with the Bluetooth talking to themselves, or the gay couple, whatever. There is that moment when he sees. I think it's on by the bus stop or the kiosk, the ad with the senator that we've seen before, played by Jim Beaver, and he has a little bit of a reaction to that. And the fact that that's that whole little bit of him reacting to it and the character's name and everything is all a reference to Supernatural. I didn't watch Supernatural. I've seen a few episodes. Yeah. I never got back to it, but it seems like every other person I know has seen it. And I'm like, how many episodes? 500 episodes. I'm never gonna watch it. Like,
yeah, I'm in the same boat with that. Yep. And so I would have missed it too.
But Jim Beaver was on that show, and apparently there was even a whole gag in Supernatural that they went extremely meta, where, you know, people were actors, and he'll never have that name, you'll never see that name, and then that's the name of the senator or something. It works on, it's like a double level Supernatural referencing joke, from what I understand. So someone really told me, and I went out for the first time in a week last night, and someone told me, and I was like, oh, I know Jim Beaver was on Supernatural, but you know, I don't think I mentioned it. And then they said the whole thing about the name. Like, you know what? I'm not going to remember any of this, but I'll mention it on the podcast, and any Supernatural fans will be like, oh yeah, he's blah. Then you'll get what I'm talking about. Anyway.
It's very exciting for those who do.
Yes. Oh man. So, we have that scene. We kind of toggle back and forth, and when we catch up back with Homelander, I like that little moment between Homelander and the always silent Noir.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of, you know, there's so many things that we've seen over the years where a character talks to someone and the character is either doesn't communicate in a standard fashion, but they know exactly what the character means or has said. Whether it be a Chewbacca growl or Groot saying, I am Groot, or whatever it might be. There's something they'll know what it means. And I love the fact that this scene plays like Homelander is interpreting Noir's silence to mean something. It's like, oh, we've always been great friends. And again, this goes back to me referencing that animated diabolical thing they did. The final one does get into the whole Noir-Homelander relationship a little bit there. So that, again, that might be the only one worth watching. I don't know why I'm repeating that again. But I just, because this scene kind of harkened back to that, so it kind of reminded me. But it's right after that scene when it's played almost cartoonish, where it's almost Homelander turns his back and Noir just fucking hightails it out of there.
Zoom.
Zoom. Spatang. And there's that. There was a moment when he's on the elevator, and there's that other poor woman on the elevator.
Oh my God! Could you imagine?
And you realize he's carving into his arm, and it took me a couple seconds to realize that what he was doing, and then right. I remembered. It's like, that's right. They established almost from the get go. They all have tracking chips, and he's removing the tracking chip. And I'm kind of curious where they'll go with the Noir stuff, because we saw what happened to him during that time, which was kind of horrifying. And we're also going to hear later in this episode where he kind of gets fingered as the one who was behind everything. Although I'm not sure I'm buying that.
I'm with you. Yeah.
I think I agree with Soldier Boy's take on that one. In fact, if you think back to that flashback sequence, there is one person there I suspect was responsible for it, but he was not a soup. I'm pretty sure my assumption is, I think Stan Edgar is the guy who organized all this. Could be wrong, but it seems kind of maybe it's just too obvious, but I think that's...
It might be. I mean, it might be, but that's just generally where I comfortably landed.
Yeah. But it will be interesting if we only have a couple episodes to go. I'm wondering if there'll be a confrontation between Soldier Boy and Noir. Maybe Noir will speak. Maybe will the mask come off and we'll see what we know is already his disfigured face or something. Does Soldier Boy even know that happened to him? Will that have an impact on him since they were teammates before that? I'm kind of curious that there's a potential for a very interesting scene there. I don't know if that's where they're going to go with it, but just I kept thinking about the possibilities of it. So I'm very curious about that. Where do we go here in the episode? Kimiko. Kimiko is texting and typing. Can't we all relate to the thing where you type out a text a bunch of different ways? Like, no, delete that. No, 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 no. And then she just makes it something, safe.
Yep.
And basically just, I think her safe text was suggesting that they watch Singing in the Rain next, which instantly made me fall in love with Kimiko. Excellent choice. Excellent choice. One of the greatest films of all time. Unfortunately, my happiness for Kimiko doesn't last very long, because she pretty much gets snatched by one of Little Nina's men right after it. But there is something really sweet about this character who, as far as we've seen, is pretty much portrayed as being mute. And her affection for music and musicals, whether it be the first episode of the woman at the piano or the musical in the previous episode. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be the following season, but I keep thinking we're going to have a big scene with her speaking. I feel it's going to happen.
But then it has to.
Yeah, it's got to happen. Maybe it'll be French. No, it'll be French. So...
Okay, like, now I want it to be. Now I really want it to be French.
I want her, this is only for Mad Men fans out there, I want her to do the song that Megan sings in, I think it was season 5 of Mad Men, do you know the one I'm talking about? Because I'm drawing a blank on it, but it's got the ju-ju-ju-ju-ju-ju, it's got the little... I can't remember.
Yes.
I'm the Mad Men fan. And I'm drawing
I can't remember the
it.
Title of it. I know what you're talking about, though. But the Juge.
Yeah, it's very cute. Yeah, the Juju song, of course.
The Juge.
Yeah. Wow. Can't believe we don't have... Anyway, so now with everything that's been going on, I like that we're getting some interesting combinations of people, which on a show like this, I like that happening. It was kind of like when we would see like Butcher and Queen Maeve. Of course, I was like, oh, but these are two I didn't really see interacting. That's an interesting little combination. having Annie and Mother's Milk kind of being the two that are allied together, I don't think we've actually seen just that before. I mean, they've been together with a whole group, but he's been initially, I remember going back to season one, he was one of the more suspicious people of Supes to begin with, and blah, blah, blah. But I like that based on the fact that Butcher and Huey have kind of veered to an extreme that neither one of them agree with, that these two are kind of acting in concert together. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping I'm getting the scenes right here. I know there's a whole thing where she's kind of trying to talk him down, and his basic attitude is that he's tired of turning the other cheek to things.
Yes.
And
yes.
Is this the scene? I don't know, because I'm quickly trying to skim through my notes here. Is it this scene or is it later where they actually have the conversation that involves his issues?
I think it's later, because it's when they see each other at the party at the Herogasm, I believe, after he takes her out of there.
No, I mean Mother Milk's issues.
Oh, yeah, that's on the way to the party.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, you know what, I brought it up. We can talk about it now anyway, just because since I already brought it up. I was really all about that scene. I was thrilled that we were getting into the fact of someone making note of his OCD tendencies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that we get a really solid, believable, and heartfelt explanation. And with that, the realization of just how damaging what Soldier Boy apparently did was, not just the death of, you know, loved ones, but how it's had a lasting, haunting impact on him from that point on.
And yeah, he has serious PTSD and that he's had since childhood. And it's funny because it's like, he knows exactly where his OCD comes from. He knows why he has the rituals. He knows what he has to do in order to feel some sort of control. But it's so damaging that even with all of that knowledge, he's still not conquering it.
Yeah, there's something to be said for the fact that, look, I speak about one of the greatest attributes to have, especially when you have any sort of problems or issues, is to be self-aware. I think it's always the first step, regardless. And those who lack that awareness are thus one step removed from being able to deal with it.
Right.
However, at the same time, especially for an issue of the nature he has, which is something in the OCD category or whatever, it's almost more frustrating because you're totally aware of it. Mm-hmm. And rationally, you know that it doesn't, you know, like his belief fostered from childhood to now is he does these things because it would keep Soldier Boy away. It would keep him. And even though obviously this is like 20, 30, whatever number of years later, he's still doing that. He can't, mm-hmm. the rituals have become baked into his everyday life that he can't not do them, even though he's clearly a smart and rational enough person to know that that doesn't really make sense, but that's the nature of that problem, you know? It's kind of like when I was telling you about me tapping like two parts of my stoop when I walk into the house. Mm-hmm. And that's a more recent thing, and I couldn't even tell you why I started doing it. It might have been something as silly as I went out when I was smoking. I would go out to smoke a cigarette when I was nervous about a baseball game, and I believed doing that would help my team win or something.
You know, outside of those who have PTSD, you're not going to find a group of people that have more OCD rituals than a baseball player. and those who love the game. I mean, it's abundant. There's most of these guys going up to bat do not need to adjust their glove five times, but they need to adjust their glove five times.
Oh yeah. That's why I don't mind that. I mean, I don't really do it now. I haven't been doing it now as of late, But for many years, I would get into my own superstition riddled rituals while watching or certain parts of a baseball game. And one of my rationalizations were like, dude, there is no more athlete that's more superstitious than baseball players themselves.
Yep.
they do all this crazy crap. So
you bet.
Now, the fact that I would think that one of, you know, several million fans, you know, in his apartment in Brooklyn could impact a baseball game.
Alone have the power.
Anyway, so let's switch over to something else for now.
He's aware. He knows why he has these tics. But now, did you like that you got this story as just a conversational piece, like just out of his mouth, versus, you know, like say he's having a flashback, like he's had a few flash images? Did you prefer this method? I mean, it was a little bit faster and more self-explanatory.
I go back and forth with that. I would say I preferred it in this instance. It's a writing thing. Sometimes it's better to have a character just tell a story.
Sure.
And sometimes you want it to be shown to you. I won't go through, I could pull up a billion different movies where there are examples of it. But if you think about it, some of the best scenes you've ever seen, homonym. Unintended, whatever. Homonym, is that the right word? Our characters just telling a story rather than seeing it. Other times, it works better for us to get the flashes of it. You know? Our best example is, hey, you know, what's better? If we got a flashback of what happened with Mike and when he was a cop back in Philadelphia, you know, about the guy who was abusing his wife, or right, when he tells Walter White that story. Of course it's better that he tells the story. Much better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also lends to the idea that Starlight and him are becoming a duo.
Yes.
Like this is the beginning of their partnership.
Using the device of him just telling her, rather than, you know, like maybe he starts to tell her and all of a sudden we get a flashback and then we come back out of it, which is would be another way to do that. Not a very budget conscious way to do it, by the way. By the way, when you do scenes like this, it's also cheaper, obviously,
because of what I'm saying.
But yeah, you hit it right on the head. It also, we get, he is telling her, and this communication is going to help bond them more than they had been before. So it works very well in that regard as well. So we'll go from someone who is self-aware to someone. A-Train. A-Train with his little pitch promo there. Let me tell you something. There's something only me and maybe a few of our listeners will be aware of, but I have to bring this up. I have my own personal background of working in the stock photo and footage industry for over a quarter century. And I'm watching this little pitch promo that he's put together, and I'm seeing them use this, you know, quote unquote stock footage that still has the Vought Images watermark on it. That is so smart, and it made me laugh. I don't know how funny other people will find it, but anyone who's been in the business or is familiar with the business, it's very funny. It's also a very big send-up of some major stock photo houses like Getty Images. Not that anyone's going to get that who's listening, except for, actually a few people I know from back in the day listen. But it's just so such a brilliant, smart kind of a gag. I really appreciated it. Now, this whole... Obviously, this leads into this whole little back and forth between A-Train and Ashley. And it's interesting because you're dealing with two characters that neither one of these are very beloved by the viewers, I'm going to say. I mean, Ashley, at this point, is she even remotely a likable character? I don't know if she ever was before. Never really felt that way. And now she's always like on that borderline of just losing it constantly. Like
she pulls at
her. She rips at the hair. Wasn't there a scene earlier this season, when I think it's during the sex scene, where she rips out her hair while she's having sex? Or I don't know if
shit like that that actually makes me really like that character.
No,
she's just nuts.
Yeah, I don't know. That's I was about to disclose something I didn't want to disclose. I'm glad I stopped. I'm gonna stop right there. But you know. All I'm going to say is, when you're with someone who's really just a little bit too into the violence, sometimes it's not that much fun. But she's also kind of a little bit drunk on power when she's not being frightened.
Yeah.
When she's not frightened to death about Homelander's going to fry her at any moment.
Yeah, like when she's got the office to herself, she's doing pretty good, right?
Right. But I thought what was interesting in this scene, you know, where A-Train's really trying to stand up for something here and about dealing with Blue Hawk and everything else, it's nice to know that she actually is fully aware of all the shit and the deaths that A-Train has caused. You know, we're not just talking about Huey's girlfriend Robin that we all knew about. She knows about all the other stuff too. So that I thought that was very interesting.
Well, and it's great too, because it didn't come from her to him in the sense of like there's some sort of like she has some sort of moral scruple, right? It's not like a I'm good and you are bad and the things you've done is bad, so you can't tell me what to do. It was more like, we're all shitty here. You just happen to be shittier than I am. It was very like I'm here's your past and I know it. So, you know, like, plus the audience got to have a little bit, you know, the things were kind of irritating about him. It was like, it was watching him get spanked, basically.
Oh yeah. And with her, it's also, especially with her newfound position, she is now fully about exerting her power over pretty much any soup not named Homelander.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with someone like now, whether she's aware of his health issue, I think she is. If she knows all the other stuff, she must be aware of that as well.
Yep.
So there's not much that he can do. She certainly treats Starlight that way, but which she always kind of did to begin with. Who else do you got? She doesn't really deal with Noir. She obviously had no issue with whatever they did to Maeve. The Deep's a moron. So it really is just Homelander that she has to worry about.
Yep.
So Homelander and Deep, speaking of the two of them, we get that little scene of Deep telling Homelander that, you know, that Noir kind of hightailed it out of there. And then it's Homelander's reactions like, this is like the great, you know, it's like a betrayal. It's like, it was one of those things where you realize, oh, wait, he's being serious. He really does view Noir this way. And maybe it's because Noir, you know, other than the animated thing, which I've mentioned 3,000 times already, but the fact that Noir is, you know, the silent one makes him feel like he's more comfortable with him than anyone else. You know, could even go to the fact, if you want to do the whole, their DC character archetypes, one can make the case like, oh, if he's Superman, then Noir's kind of like Batman. So you have that kind of weird bonding thing there as well. And again, it also goes to what I was saying earlier, that it's so much about Homelander is he's still like a little bratty kid. So in a lot of ways, it's like, you know, it's like when you're 8 years old and you think like your best friend kind of like screwed you over, you know, you can react the way he does here.
Well, yeah. And it's like we've talked about before with, you know, childhood bullies, you know, the bully is very, very seldom is the bully a lone wolf. He's always got henchmen around him, you know, and, you know, imagine a school bully when those henchmen say, this is too far.
Oh, yeah, and that's a scene that we've seen played out in movie after movie, where the guy's always left when a bully is vanquished, is when he's left alone. If the bully is vanquished, you know, not like the cool guy and like Stand By Me and shit. So you know, shout out to Kiefer. And so Deep has actually, I'd even say shockingly, figured out what Soldier Boy must be up to, that he's going after members of his old team, Payback, which would actually therefore include Noir. So therefore he knows why Noir is, you know, hightailed it out of there. And why do I keep saying Hightail? And he also knows where he must be heading next, which turns out to be Vermont, where the TNT twins are. We met those two briefly in that flashback as well. So we segue over, and this is a good talking point scene, I would say. Homelander by himself. Homelander by himself. Oh, wait, no, there's a mirror there. And now this is something I've seen before. We've all seen this kind of scene play out in a few different things over the years.
Oh, that.
If you want to go to Lord of the Rings and say it's a very Gollum Smeagol kind of a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But when you're dealing with a character who's dealing with a mental split, you usually see something like this where he's talking to himself in the mirror and...
Yeah, like some Green Goblin action.
Right, exactly. Bingo. Oh, see, one for the superhero thing makes more... Or supervillain thing, I should say. Makes far more sense. So, you get them... He's talking to himself and that reference to being... first of all, I love that reference to being left alone in the bad room, which I thought was very interesting. I also like the fact that bad room kind of sounds like bedroom, but it's something far more sinister than that, because it's probably it's clearly must be referencing something when Homelander was being essentially raised in a lab, if I recall.
Right.
Which kind of weirdly makes Homelander very similar to Eleven on Stranger Things when I think about it.
Yeah, it's weird to have both of those shows kind of circulating in the brain at the same time. But yeah, I definitely my brain touched on that.
Yeah. But it's interesting here that the reflection is just like it's Homelander drained of all. Well, Homelander does not have empathy, but it's also Homelander without being cursed by whatever his weaknesses are, his fallibilities. He's just
God version of him.
Yeah, right. That's actually it. Man, God. And then I think he even mocks him for that. He talks about him wanting to be pure and clean. And I kept thinking, oh, Stormfront would love this conversation right now. oh, yeah. By the way, I almost forgot until I think during this episode, I think it's a quick reference to it. I kept forgetting that Stormfront, once upon a time, she was Liberty, I think.
Yes.
Back in the
day. Yes.
And she was actually right. With Soldier Boy. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that. So there is something else that Soldier Boy and Homelander have in common. Guess what? They're Eskimo brothers. All right. That's right. I said it. Because somebody had to say it. Especially in an episode. Hey, if you're going to bring up Eskimo brothers, why not bring it up in an episode called Herogasm? So there you go. Oh, if there's anybody out there who doesn't know what the term Eskimo brothers is, just Google it. I'm not going to tell you.
Google it.
But I think you can kind of
put it on your long list of things to Google.
I think you kind of figure out from what I said anyway.
I gotta say something though about this performance from this episode in this scene specifically with Anthony Starr. Like he's obviously been amazing in the role. He's done such a fantastic job at being this charismatic leader, villain, spoiled brat, baby, godchild. But he brought something really different to this scene. And I don't just mean, you know, the character or the mirror image of himself. Just, I cannot imagine as an actor how difficult it would be to play a scene essentially against yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not there to read the lines. Somebody else has got to read those lines to you. I'm assuming someone read the lines for him while he was doing it. But there's just this nuance that has to come in of something in the facial expression that says, I recognize who I'm looking at.
Right.
So to have these conversations in the mirror, and it's not just like it's not just like one little, you know, like subtle, like, you know, thumbs up pointing at the mirror kind of crap. Like there's this really deep emotional conversation that is a complete turning point. Like, you know that this is a turning point for his character. I mean, not like he wasn't heading in that direction anyway.
Right.
But it just, I don't know. It was just really awesome to see. And quite honestly, I think this episode, and we'll talk a little bit later about another scene, but I think this episode holds two of my favorite scenes in the series thus far.
I wonder if the other scene is the same one I'm thinking of. We'll find out later. One last thing about the moment in the mirror. You know, when he's, I'm talking to the man in the mirror. and because I mentioned Stormfront, so it just occurred to me. There's a moment where, I said moment already, there's a part where his reflection refers to the mud people. Now, what I find interesting about that is when you had a character like Stormfront, obviously she had the whole Nazi background, so the whole white Aryan thing, whatever. Yeah. And he even says pure, clean, except what I believe the reflection is referring to, he regards all humans that way. Because, again, being a god, so everyone is like that. It's not just people of color. It's like, no, it's people, period. Which is something we've seen is in Homelander's wiring and chemistry from, remember, his, like we referenced in previous, when he, his little fantasy of just, you know, lasering an entire thousands of people at once. Or even when
who hasn't been there?
Well, yeah, you know. Or even when
but the fact that he didn't come from a mother, right? Like, there's no connecting him to the human race in his mind.
Right. He didn't come out of a place where anyone goes nom nom nom. Anyway, we'll get to that later. So Soldier Boy. Yeah, I just had to throw that in because it's really that's.
We're heading in that direction, man. It's fine. We got to warm this up.
That's not my favorite scene. It's my favorite just line in the entire episode. Soldier Boy and Huey are watching an older movie with that featured Payback, because I guess I love how all the soups just do their own movies all the time in this. And that's when, you see Payback and you see the TNT twins are in it. And that's when you get a little more insight into Soldier Boy and him dropping the references to Bill Cosby. That was a real man. Man, he can make a strong drink. And I went, oh, that is just so good. So while they're in the room, that's when we also, I think we established that in the previous episode, the whole thing with the Geiger counter being something used with Soldier Boy around. But as, you know, as he starts to get more agitated, you know, the radioactivity starts to build up and more likely he's going to, like, blow up, essentially. So I like that, just having that device, it actually is a device, literally, there, as, you know, and so we always had that ever-present ticking bomb situation. Big on, you know, writing 101. If you can work in, you know, something that's kind of like a ticking bomb into a scene, or a story, it's great. And it's usually not a literal bomb, or a little explosion, but something of that ilk, like something like we're dreading and anticipating may actually happen.
Yes.
So that's what it is. And Soldier Boy literally is that thing here. That's when Butcher Boy shows up with an address of where they're going to go, which, again, we start to realize, okay, all these different people are all eventually going to converge in the same place. Everything was. I'd like to say it's all going to come to a head soon. Although I guess there is kind of a whole lot of head going on in that scene. Anyway, but you know, to get ready, you know, he and Huey have to shoot up first. It's like, oh, that's sweet. Deep. Of all characters,
heartfelt best friends moment.
I know, it's sweet. You know, they you know, it's kind of like when the baseball players used to bond. You know, like Canseco and McGuire used to bond with each other when they were shooting each other up the ass, which I believe also happened in that scene later. Anyway,
well, and it all comes around. I also
it all comes together. Moment. Apparently, they all did too.
It all comes together. I love too, as they're you know, they're souping up, you know, that
souping up.
Soldier Boy's just like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, we've already like, oh, right. I think we've already established that Soldier Boy.
I love that there isn't There's no scoffing. There's no demoralizing. There's no disappointment. It's just like, oh yeah, cool. Okay, that's how we're gonna do this.
I think he just doesn't care. He's like, all right. I don't think he gives the flying anything about either of these two. He's just like, he's just basically nodding, biding his time because he's got his own mission to take care of. He doesn't.
Yep.
The fact that he's even going along with the whole Homelander thing is in itself kind of amazing, but we're going to get there. So, I love the fact that with all these seemingly somewhat smarter characters and people, the first one to show up at that little place in Vermont is the Deep. The Deep shows up.
Of course it is.
And we, you know, we see the TNT twins. You know, they're a bit older, a bit thicker than they were, you know, back in the 80s, whatever. Also going along with the idea of how, you know, soups don't age as much because they're older, but they're not as old. You know, they don't look like they're 45 years older, you know. So.
Yeah, and the personality on these two really, really reminded me of like Dee and Dennis Reynolds. Like there's some real hatred, real sibling hatred in there.
See, I was thinking about you and Dan, actually. No. But this is when we have the moment where the Deep hears sounds and when he walks through the doorway and then you see his pupils lighting up. With the sights and the sounds in front of him, and you realize this is herogasm. And then and everyone watches like, yeah, we're finally there. We're finally there. But no, we're going to cut to something else. Oh, because, you know, you have to delay the gratification of finally getting to herogasm. All right. So we get that scene of Annie, Homelander, and, hey, Newman. It's on some morning show or something. Homelander basically loses it once again. Goes off one of his, you know, bad media kind of rants and, you know, kind of storms off the set. Which, again, is the only character that probably scares the fudge out of everybody when he does that because he's like, oh, he might kill somebody. Because right
now, he pulls a real Christian Bale. The amateurs.
So, not Christian Bale. How dare you? So, that leaves Annie and Newman. And then they have a moment a little later on where we realize that Newman knows that she knows. Because she makes that little head-popping joke.
Yeah, just throw that in.
And that's when you get Annie having her little kind of like, enough already. She's sick and tired, not going to take it anymore. She's tired of people telling her to do things, whatever the cost, even if you have to get dirty and all that other kind of stuff. So she's not going to go along with Newman here. She's, you know, do your worst, and she's kind of storms out. But again, I like the fact that we keep having these situations where no one ever seems to get a leg up or the upper hand on the bad guys in this season. You know, Homelander knows stuff that already that they wish he had known. Now she knows stuff that they wish she had known. You know, and if she knows that Annie knows, that pretty much means she knows that Huey knows too. I'm pretty sure because go. Right.
Well, and I gotta say, it's interesting that we're watching her form so many powerful enemies.
Hmm.
You know, because it's just one after another with her. She's you can't break ties from these people. Breaking away from them like literally means signing them up for your enemy list. But on that same note, Newman is like, yeah, why don't you just keep this to yourself? Like, right. Don't... She basically is like, shh, don't tell anyone. You know, like, I don't know how I feel about that yet. And we'll see how that goes going forward. Because I feel if she really means, like, don't tell anyone and she doesn't come after her for having this knowledge and telling her no, then it means that there is generally some respect that she has for Starlight as Annie, as a person. But I don't know. A girl just keeps like checking off everybody that could really mess her shit up and putting them right and center. of everything.
I'm not really sure who it would be that she would be worried that Annie would tell anyway. She's certainly not going to tell Homelander. Who? So would she care if she told Huey? What difference would that make? I don't.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe she's just more worried about her going to the media.
Yeah, no, right. That would make some sense. Although, when the counter to that would have been, if she hasn't already, why?
Right.
Because obviously they have something else going on. But they probably, everybody knows everybody. It's like, remember we talked about how, you know, everybody has secrets, but apparently on this show, which is good, like, yeah, everybody has secrets, but everybody else seems to know the secrets already. So they don't really work out very well. True. So, speaking of things that don't work out very well, we backtrack to Kimiko, and it turns out both she and Shari are now cuffed captives, and, you know, they're bound to these chairs, and then we see Frenchie is brought in, he's stark naked, they bind his neck, you know, his head to a pole with a bicycle lock, just like in the season one of Breaking Bad, so it's like, yeah, Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. And that's when between all the goons and little Nina comes in. And the whole thing is that she wants him to choose. It's a Frenchie's choice, you know.
Who's your favorite?
Yeah. And, you know, classic situation, you know, you kill this one, you kill that one. It's like, wow, it's like the Joker making Batman choose between, you know, Harvey Dent and his girlfriend. But
now, were you like me? Because I thought to myself, okay, if they actually get as far as actually taking one of these girls out, like, she seems like somebody would say, like, pick who to save, and then they pick, like, he would pick who to save, and then that's who she'd shoot.
Yes. Yeah, I could see them doing that. But, which is basically what they, I think, kind of what they did in The Dark Knight, so, yeah. Yes. But luckily for decision makers, Kimiko actually gets free herself, and then we get some real freaking ultra violence that culminates in stabby, stabby, stabby. And like, whoa! after about like the seventh or eighth, I was like, whoa, 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 okay, that's a red band trailer moment here. Let's
yeah, and you want to know what is, like, even just more impressive with all this is, like, it's ultra violent, and she's doesn't have suit powers.
Yeah,
this is just her raw ability.
Yeah, she's got skills that aren't necessarily soup skills. They're just skills. Yeah.
Yep.
Unfortunately for them, the one person who does get away is little Nina, so we know there'll be more to deal with her in subsequent episodes. But everyone else seems to be fine from this point on. And you're right. The next scene, which is with Annie and Mother's Milk on the drive, that's where we get the whole thing about his OCD. And I love the phrase is, have you always had that? Is how she started. Mm-hmm. And she's referring to, because she's watching him tapping on the wheel. And I love that this is an audio cast, but you see me on the video and I'm doing the tapping thing. Yeah, and that's where you get the whole story about, you know, Soldier Boy and everything, throwing a car through the thing and all that stuff. I got a little confused, though. Because in previous episodes, Mother's Milk kept making, and correct me if I'm wrong, once again, he was making references to Soldier Boy having killed his father.
See, I thought that, too.
And in this scene, it's about killing his grandfather. So I'm very confused about that, unless they both died. Because he did mention later on, when we have a scene later on where he says, killed my family.
Right.
Which implies he killed all of them at that in that scene, but he seems to be focused just on the grandfather here. I was a little fuzzy on that. I got confused. But when he says the family thing later on, I realized, okay, maybe what he did...
Yeah.
Destroyed the entire house and everyone. It's just his father. His grandfather was the first one. Maybe. I don't know. It made it seem like the story was focused on the fact if he hadn't said something to his grandfather, he wouldn't have been standing there and not gotten hit by the car that was hurled through the air. But that doesn't make sense if, you know, there's a little bit of confusion. Maybe we'll get a bit more on it late in another episode.
Well, and I think that there's, If we are right on this, and I'm pretty sure that we are, because I'm with you. I remember him talking about losing his father. But if that is the case, maybe this isn't a, maybe this is one of those, it killed my grandfather, and then there's like the ricochet trickle down effect, over the years where he lost his family due to this tragedy being the thing that started it.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So this, I mean, again, we talked about it before, so I just want to mention that now, because now that I got my notes in front of me, I realize, oh, I'm confused about the whole father/grandfather situation here.
Sure.
So, again, as we said before, you get this whole story, it's very moving and heartfelt, and it's kind of this really nice, serious moment here. And I will say, we get one of the most dramatic shifts in tone that I can recall having ever seen, well, ever. So, yeah, we go from Mother's Milk, or MM, if we want to call him that, telling that sad and tragic story of how his OCD first started and how he's haunted by the thought of Soldier Boy coming to kill his family. And then we get the two of them showing up at the TNT Twins house to be greeted by Love Sausage and his Love Sausage. And this is where we got that thing I referenced before. I will never be able to get Annie's little improvised rave about Mother Milk's cunnilingual skills. About, oh, yeah, he gobbles up that vagina. Nom, 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 nom.
Nom, nom, nom.
It's like, that's going to be repeating in my head like a weird echo for years now. So yes, this is our true intro into Herogasm. I think at this point I'll just say, just before we get into some of what we beheld here, and what goes on for the next chunk of this episode, just to clarify what I mentioned earlier about how it was, what was different. Herogasm in the comics, when they did this years ago, was basically an event where, oh, I just realized how eerily it sounds like Jeffrey Epstein now. Where all these superheroes, they would make up some story. I think it was like the story was that they were going off-world to fight aliens or something like that. But in fact, they were all going to an island together. And basically, they were all going to this island together to... This is an explicit podcast, so it's... And we're talking about this episode, so I gotta start using the right word.
Turn the volume down if you're at work.
Yeah. Yeah, they all go there to fuck for a week. It's, you know, it's fuck, 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 suck, 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 everything and everywhere and every type of possible way and different devices and things and creatures and whatnot. There is one major difference beyond that that happened in the comics. How shall I put this? Well, we're going to get to a little bit later about the encounter between Homelander and Soldier Boy. Yeah, Homelander and Soldier Boy also encounter each other in Herogasm in the comics. Something else happens between those two. And it's, and I don't mean the fight. It's something else.
Some nom 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 nom.
Some... Yeah, well, yeah, anyway, I'll just leave it at that. You know, again, Google. All right, so, look, in my notes, I just wrote, you know, various things that happen at the orgy. But I love when we walk in and you've got, like, you know, you get more naked extras than Caligula. Although I like that they're very careful with the camera. So it never seems like they go for anything gratuitous.
Right.
You know, it's not like we see like thousands of boobs bouncing all around or dicks swinging or whatever, like we would have expected. Right.
Like every shot gives you a clear idea of what's happening without seeing what's happening.
Oh yeah. So, but the one of the things you can't deny when we see it, and right off the bat, one of my favorite things in the episode. And after telling that story, no less, Mother's Milk gets hit by a tornado. I will call that, and by the way, this tends to be the only time I ever hear this word used. A torrent of spooge, you know, whatever we're doing, jizz, you know, cum, whatever. I was like, when it first happened, I went like, wait, is that, oh, jeez. I realized.
His poor jacket, like that's done for.
His poor everything.
He was so worried about his jacket.
Was that supposed to be from Love Sausage? Because I guess that would make sense. Oh my god! I mean, I.
There was a lot of it. There really was.
And also to do it, I mean, okay. Granted, he doesn't have his OCD isn't like Monk from the old Monk TV
right,
show,
but still.
It's the character of all characters to get, you know, a ton of cum dumped on him.
Challenging situation.
Oh my. So yeah, and then, you know, it's one of those, I guess it's one of those things where if I watch the episode again or multiple times, he'd start doing freeze frames, start trying to like really pay attention to what's going on and different things. Cause I even heard about a couple of things like, I don't remember seeing that. I mean, I saw the obvious things like, you know, the floating vibrators. What is that, the starlight vibrator actually that we had seen in that other episode? I thought it might've been.
I think it is.
But we got that one floating in the air. We got the ice. We got the icicle. I believed something that I didn't catch the first time, but I read and then I went back to find it. Where I think a dude is actually pleasuring a bunch of ladies with his mom. He's doing cunnilingus of the mind.
Yep. Saw that one. Let's not forget the termite.
Oh well, termite. Oh, by the way, I'm so glad that it took this episode for me to actually know what the character's name was. I totally missed his name was Termite in the first episode of the season. Also clarifies, if they're naming him Termite, then they really are going for more the Ant-Man takeoff than being an Atom thing. Although, same fucking thing. Then he's not controlling bugs, so who cares? the Termite thing. So, story-wise, in the midst of all this, we get Huey showing up. He's trying to find the twins for Soldier Boy. Because he's trying to avoid anyone else getting hurt. Which is what everyone's motivation is. The same way, like, you know, Annie and Mother's Milk kind of want to get everyone the hell out of there because they know that Soldier Boy's going to show up. And if he shows up, people are going to get hurt. But when Huey's there, that's when he encounters A-Train.
First of all, you could not have a more convenient soup power than what he has, like, if you're headed into an orgy. Just saying. That worked out. That was kismet.
His transporting ability?
Yeah, he just gets to pop right in naked as a Jaybird. Ready to go.
Right, he's already... I hadn't thought of it that way.
There's none of that, like, weird, you know, like, where do I leave my coat? You know? Nah. Come as you are, man.
Well, yeah, because the danger, because usually at parties, you tend to put all your coats on a bed or something.
Yeah, and you don't want to do that in an orgy.
Not this kind of orgy.
Not that caliber, no.
Not when someone might hit you with, like, you know, 40,000 pounds of...
fucking fire hose worth of jizz.
Oh my god. So he encounters A-Train, and now that Huey is souped up, and of course we've seen him stand up to like Homelander, you know, when he was still just mortal. But now that he's got the soup stuff running through his veins, he's probably even more emboldened, and he fucking tells off A-Train because he never said sorry for Robin.
Mm-hmm.
But what Huey doesn't realize is that A-Train's going through a thing right now. And based on what happened specifically with Blue Hawk and his brother, he's finally having some, what's the word? Regrets? Empathy?
Little empathy, maybe. Realization
of the horrors that he's responsible for. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think it was anything Ashley said to him. He kind of says sorry. Now, I don't know if just saying, being sincere and saying sorry for, you know, basically turning your girlfriend into a, you know, a a bag of battered meat is really going to do the job. So then Huey hits him. And I guess it's a pretty good punch. I mean, he doesn't knock him on his ass, but I got a little confused by it, though. Because there didn't seem to be anything that extraordinary about the punch, other than the fact he punched him.
Well, I think if he hadn't juiced, dude, I think that if he were to get hit, he probably would have done one of those, like, I, like, broke his hand situations.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know if that would have been what was in A-Train's head, because A-Train questions, how'd you do that? And I kept wondering, how did he do what? He just punched you. There wasn't anything more extraordinary about it.
He didn't hurt himself. Like, he didn't hurt himself hitting him. So,
I guess.
He basically punched. It was like if two guys weren't superheroes, like, fought. It was an even playing field. And I'm assuming that A-Train has not had an even playing field for, you know, his entire adult life.
I don't know if they've ever established that he's got any form of invulnerability or dense skin where it'd be like, you know, someone hitting him is like hitting, you know,
like some kind of solid strength.
I don't, because that really, to me, that wouldn't really make sense. That's not what his abilities are. So I just find it, again, I'm not knocking it that much. I just find it a little bit questionable outside of the fact, just the fact he would have the nerve or the guts to do that. But anything else didn't really make sense to me. I feel it's a stretch to say, he thinks he probably would have hurt. Like, no, I don't think that a person would think that in that moment. You know, I don't, it doesn't really work for me. Anyway, it doesn't matter because Annie stops him, so we don't get to see that going any further. And we realize that the only reason A-Train would be there because he's there looking for Blue Hawk, of course. We'll just skip that right now. He certainly finds him. And,
he does.
It's kind of like, he basically does with him, it's kind of like what you do when you have a dog with no legs. You take him out for a drag. He takes Blue Hawk out for a drag.
It's like the old cowboy, you know, trope where you tie him to the horse and slap the horse and send him running through the desert.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, someone like Blue Hawk is probably the same old grind because he gets grinded up against the the asphalt because A-Train decides to use his super speed. However, at the end of it, as we hear the bloop, 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 bloop slowing down, we realize, did A-Train just kill himself by killing Blue Hawk? Don't know yet. I'm assuming he's still alive because he's one of the main characters on the show, but he certainly put his life at risk, if nothing else, or he's temporarily dead, at least at this point, until something or someone happens to, maybe someone will hit him with a little lightning bolt and shock his heart back into working order or something.
Yes, I'm assuming so. And the fact that we had the whole scene with him and Huey, too, I don't think it was just a, I'm sorry, so Huey has that end there with him. I think that maybe some of the point of him hitting him and then him going, how'd you do that, might bring us back around, because as we know, A-Train had a problem and addiction with this. So there might be some common field that we see going forward with him and Huey.
Right. And I would imagine Starlight's abilities, she might be the one that might be able to kickstart his heart for him, you know, a little kind of a thing. So I could see that happen.
Sure.
Speaking of Annie, Huey kind of teleports her out of there before she can approach Soldier Boy. And they have it out. While he's naked, of course, because that's when these kind of things always seem to happen. And all I'm thinking is, poor...
They both are. And I just wanted to say, like, I thought that was fucking great, because I didn't think about, you know, like, him grabbing somebody else and making them, like, jump with him would also disrobe them.
Yeah, I didn't think of that either.
Was pretty funny.
Yeah. And all I was thinking during the whole scene is, like, poor stupid Huey. He's just... He is determined to be the king of self-sabotage. And it's so frustrating because it's always frustrating when you watch something or even real life when someone you know is smart enough to know better. And Huey's not a dumb guy. He's smart enough to know better. It's just like when you see someone who's in a bad relationship. They're smart enough to know better. And they make the worst possible decision. It's like, why? What are you doing? Why are you saying how? What? I mean, there is something admirable about his honesty, but it's so but his mindset is so misplaced to think that it's about, you know, him wanting to save her because she mm-hmm. always saves him. And it comes down to the fact that he never really was okay with the fact that he's with someone who is clearly so much more powerful, stronger, whatever you want to call it. It's not about the fact that she has powers. It's the fact that, you know, she's
she doesn't need him.
Exactly. Thank you.
Doesn't need him. And on top of all of that, the thing that he's really searching for, if he was really searching to save something, it's not her. He's continuously trying to save the girlfriend that was killed. He's trying to save the dead girlfriend because everything that he joined in with Butcher, the agreements he's made, it started because of this. This is what started everything, all the way down to 5 minutes previously. And he's chewing A-Train's ass. This has never been about saving Starlight. It's always been about saving the dead girlfriend.
Right. Absolutely. Perfect. You get a little bit of applause. Anyway, so...
I will take it when I can get it.
Back at Orgy Central, we finally get the encounter, one of the encounters we were waiting for. Between Mother's Milk and Soulja Boy. And this kind of goes with my saying Soulja Boy is kind of similar to Homelander in the sense that why would he give, you know, a rat's ass about what any regular person think, rando, as they like to say in the biz, has to say to him. So when Mother's Milk says that thing like, you killed my family, like he's, you know, like a Nigo Montoya or something, Soulja Boy's comment is like, which one? And it's one of those things like, wait a minute, I can't think, is he being witty? Is that even witty to begin with? I'm not really sure.
Yes, it's just like an honest question.
What does that mean? Does it mean like I've killed a lot of families? Which one was yours? Or which one of your families? Maybe you have, I see that you're a black person. Maybe you have multiple families. I don't know how that works. I don't know. Very strange. Butcher steps in, however, to... And the thing that I failed to mention earlier, in one of the earlier scenes between Mother's Milk and Annie, I just realized I should mention now, and I think this is when Annie's trying to talk him down a little bit, is Mother's Milk comes into this. I mean, yes, it is supposed to be all about him encountering and dealing with Soulja Boy somehow, though how, I have no idea what he's thinking. But he's also more than prepared to take out Butcher. From the get-go, when he's getting the packing a gun and everything, that's not supposed to be for Soulja Boy. I don't think. I think that's supposed to be taking care of Butcher.
Yeah, stop anything that gets in his way.
Yeah, so you have the scene between Butcher and Mother's Milk happening while Soulja Boy goes to find the bickering TNT twins. So you get this little fight between Mother's Milk and Butcher, you know, who's basically all about him, how he's pointing out his hypocrisy while he's hitting him with a bat. And then you realize that Butcher has really gotten himself some really excellent V because none of this is affecting him at all. He looks like he's as powerful as any of them right now. We kind of toggle back and forth between that and the twins. And that's where the twins claim that's the moment where the twins are claiming that it was Noir who had betrayed Soulja Boy. And that's the moment where Soulja Boy says he knows that really means it was Vought who did it.
Mm-hmm.
The corporation, I guess. But as extremely bad luck would have it, somehow the wackiest of coincidences happens. There happens to be a little radio playing nearby. And of all the pieces of music they could possibly be playing... They're playing that familiar little Russian pop tune that we heard in another episode. By the way, that song is called Escape by someone whose name I'm not even going to try to pronounce. Not important.
It's got to be, the song's got to be like...
It's a nothing
song. It's got to be the most common Russian pop song in the world, considering that it's like literally on every person's radio.
Oh yeah. It's like they sing that instead of Happy Birthday there. No, they don't. Singer's like, his name is, I believe his first name actually is Mikhail, but his last name is really long, and I'm not going to hurt your ears by trying to pronounce it. So, but apparently it's a song that Love Sausage apparently enjoys when he's getting in the mood.
That Love Sausage. You know, he's a real nice fella.
He is. See, he's a sweet guy. Could be a wrestler.
Sweetheart. Just a sweetheart.
But sadly, you know, that song's a trigger.
Whoops.
And oops. Things kind of go kablooey.
Yeah, they're just a little bit of an accident.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, Herogasm. As the biggest explosion at Herogasm is not what happened to Mother's Milk a little bit earlier. It's Soldier Boy basically blowing the whole fucking place up.
That is how you do a 70th anniversary right there.
Yeah. Now, Huey tries to stop Annie from going to check it out, but she kind of whammies him away with her abilities there. You know, the orgy at this point is a total wreck. And in the midst of all this, that's when Homelander arrives.
Yes.
And when since you mentioned termite before, we should point out that when he lands in front of the house, he just happens to land with his foot squashing this little guy saying, "Somebody help me." Which is also kind of like a little wink at the original Fly movie where,
yes,
from the 50s, where the character is like the little, he's like, "Help me." He basically, Homelander's heel squishes him. So bye-bye termite. No more blowing anyone up from inside their
and in great. And a great Homelander nod there, too, is that he doesn't accidentally step on him because he's little and there and it's chaos. No, he looks at him first and then squishes him.
Oh, man. So Homelander enters. Then we have the encounter between him and Soldier Boy, and they fight. Now, if there's one big-ass tradition with superheroes, especially in the movies and TV shows too, I guess, but really a movie thing, they all have to eventually fight each other at some point.
Yeah.
It's something that they do. It's not just Batman v Superman. I know everyone's thinking that one. Remember, it happened in the first Avengers movie, you know.
Yep. And,
you know, they're fighting each other. Then it happened again in Civil War, Iron Man versus Captain America fighting each other. It's a thing. It's a thing. It's a thing in the comic books. For the last 60, 70 years, DC or Marvel, one of the big events is always, oh, let's just take two superheroes and have them, for some reason, randomly fight each other, even if it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. That's what you do, because everyone gets excited to go like, oh, boy, you know, can't think of like, oh, Thor's going to fight Silver Surfer. That doesn't even make sense. What the hell? It's what they do all the fucking time. And this fight scene, I got to say, it's a TV show. I know they are now Amazon and everyone else. I know they're throwing a decent amount of money at this show. The show is not done on the cheap, but it's not like it's a $200 million movie. But I'm going to tell you right now, this, at least the fight scene that we get that plays out, I would put it right there with any of those aforementioned battles you've seen in those movies.
It was, like, just to go a little, you know, to geek out a little bit, it was fucking awesome. It was so fun to watch. When we get Butcher, like, doing his Billy Idol sneer, and Huey gets to be involved, and just seeing Homelander be like, what the fuck? It was...
Oh, yeah. Him reacting to Butcher having abilities. And so going, what did you do? And whatever, just him kind of freaking out about it. And then when they all have him held down, there's that moment like, oh, it's a little bit like when they're all holding Thanos and, you know, and,
right?
Where they think they've got him and then they don't. But it's also one of the only times we've really seen Homelander actually being taken down a peg and almost, and
yeah,
pretty, he's almost defeated. He basically runs away. He doesn't beat them. He gets the hell out of there because he may have powers, but Soldier Boy is on his level, and apparently with the V that Butcher has taken, he's right there too. So
yep.
It was a really, really great, I mean, look, I'm watching the show, and I'm watching it for the sheer lunacy of it and some of the sly humor of it and just enjoying it, whatever. And sometimes just the bonker shit that happens or the psychotic things like, oh my God, they're gonna let everyone on that airliner die or that kind of stuff. I don't expect like the actual fight scenes to be that good. I think it'll be okay. They're fine. This was like, this was worth the price of admission.
And, yeah, it was pretty great.
And I think also because even more so than the first two seasons, because we've seen just, I'm not going to say he's taken a turn because he was always, you know, the villain, but Homelander seems so much more unstoppable now than he ever did before. The fact that he's fought to a standstill and they almost beat him gave us a lot of satisfaction this season. Because we're all, come on, even though we know this isn't the final episode, there's probably seasons more to go with this. We're like, yeah, take him,
right?
Take him.
Yeah, you were rooting for it, and I wonder, like, well, you know, it's gonna come up. I was thinking it's like they had all three of them had him down when he was able to escape, and it's like if Starlight had been on their team, if she had been there, would that have been enough?
Possibly. I get very confused with what her abilities are sometimes.
Because, well, it seems like they just kind of like occasionally use them for something. It's like an extra set of keys. Right. It's just they kind of use them when it's going to come in handy for a certain situation.
I guess it's also, for me, maybe I get a little confused because the other members of the Seven are each one is so clearly based on an obvious character from at least the DC universe, and Starlight I'm a little more iffy on who she's supposed to be like, so I always get kind of confused. She seems like she's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, maybe,
right? She's a combo.
If anything, she's actually, and if anyone who knows me and listens to this podcast, if you want to tell me who she's supposed to be, because I never looked it up, feel free to tell me. There's a certain similarity to her and then maybe the female Captain Marvel from the Marvel Universe.
I can see that
maybe. It might be just a character that's just for some reason it's not clicking with me right now. Because everyone else, it's so obvious who they are.
Okay.
And even
I've got a combination here.
Okay.
You were right with Marvel. Mm-hmm. But also Swayze Dazzler, who I am not familiar with at all.
The Dazzler?
Yeah, Swayze Dazzler.
There's a ridiculous character. Oh my God, probably.
Like is. A parody character?
Well, there was a character from in the Marvel Universe. I don't know if she's still around. I remember when it first came out, the height of the. It was either the very late 70s or very early 80s. It could have been 79, 80. Dazzler, who was probably one of the only disco inspired superheroes. I think she was even on roller skates sometimes, I think. And she had these like light kind of powers. So it could be something like that. Did you look this up? Is that where?
Yeah. And also, a big one too, and super duh now, but, they really wanted to give her the Midwestern sensibility of Supergirl.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay. I could see that. That's fine. It makes sense because some of these characters, even though they're mainly one, but maybe there might be kind of an amalgam, you know, of a few, you know, like Noir is on one hand, it's clearly Batman, but I can also see certain elements of other characters. One could say there's a little bit of Black Panther in there if you want to go in that route, you know, a little bit of Daredevil. Anywho, I don't want to belabor that too much because I want to start getting towards the end of the episode. But we still have a few more things that happen. Frenchie and Kimiko, the fact that she thinks that she was a monster regardless of her taking V, that she's always had that in her. So it's very sad. But at the same time, it's interesting. She has this distorted view of herself. But at the same time, what makes her great is that she also wants to make sure she can convince Frenchie that that's not the case for him, that all the things that little Nina said about him during that torture session were not true. Although she does, you know, and one can see that from his reaction that there are elements of things that little Nina said that are true. I mean, because they're friends of their past and things that he did. And he's one of those characters that, you know, he did very bad things. You know, he did. We know that. I mean, but he's trying not to be that way anymore. Kind of classic. Homelander in the mirror. I realize when he's looking at himself in the mirror and he's like, oh, you know what? This might be the first time he's had a bruise.
Yeah. Yep. And he has an injury.
And, of course, by his face and having a bruise, whatever, that makes him more of a man than a god, which obviously that's a problem. So.
Yeah, and just that shot that we get, you know, with him looking at himself in the mirror and it like pans back and you get that really wide shot. It's just mwah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, oh, there's some really nice work, camera work in this episode also, I should be pointed out.
Yep.
And then, you know, we kind of wrap up the episode when we go back to the site of the orgy of death now. And we see all the after effects of that. But at some point shortly after that, I guess with Mother Milk's help, I guess he might be the one holding the camera or the phone. And he records a video. And I like that they drop in a fact of referencing something that Newman had said earlier. And one of the reasons Newman wanted to work with Annie was because of that. I think she has like 193 million followers on Instagram.
Her social media, I promise, yes.
Which means she's only got a few more than this podcast. Very impressive, Annie.
Good job, Annie.
Good job. So she live streams a video so that potentially all 193 million of her followers can see it.
Did you watch the comments? Like, were you able to read some of the comments on the live video that was?
I did not try. I know they were saying things. I decided.
It was really great because it was just, I mean, it was very accurate. But one of my favorites was like, oh my God, you guys, she's going to get killed for this. Like, and the reason I liked that, it was something along those lines. The reason why I like that is because you have we're sitting in a place as viewers watching this, like you said before, everybody has their secrets, but like everybody kind of knows each other's secrets. And it's great because they have this big face that they show the public and they have these movies and then, you know, this merchandise and they're heroes and what have you, but people still see behind that curtain. Just someone saying like, she's in real fucking danger now. Right. I thought it was great. I appreciated that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, cause she basically blows the lid off of everything here.
Yeah.
And while Soldier Boy probably wouldn't give two fucks that he exposed the truth about him.
Right.
Homelander, on the other hand, and pretty much the Vought Corporation and pretty much all so-called heroes. And then she ends it with, well, but as my notes say, and then she fucking quits.
And I quit.
Which is a pretty powerful ending to the episode. It's a huge episode. It's another huge episode.
Yeah. There's so much that happened. The story's really turned in the direction that you can tell they're hitting the peak of the storyline for this season. And it, even with the absurdity of Herogasm, God, like just some really, that's what she said, really deep shit that's going on in the storyline. And I, I like that we got a couple of real serious notes and some great performances.
And I can't help but think that with only two episodes left to go, and again, I could be totally wrong about this, been so before, I wonder if a lot of what we're seeing is going to be continuing into the following season.
I feel like it has to, because I cannot imagine that they would be able to take all of these things that they just laid on our shoulders and wrap it up, you know, in a couple episodes and really give it the dignity that they are going to give this story.
Right. And how satisfying would it be if they did that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, again, I did not, since I've only read a little bits here and there, I don't know if one can easily wrap up the Soldier Boy situation in the next two episodes,
no.
Or is that going to be something that needs to go on to, at the very least, the following season? I just figured there was so much build-up for Soldier Boy, and which is working out so far, but it feels like there has to be a lot more. And again, we've got two more episodes to go.
Yeah.
But yeah. I feel like we need another season. I feel like there's more there's so much more they can introduce into this show, which I think would be really interesting. And with Herogasm, it's kind of proven, okay, they can pretty much do everything on this show right now.
Yeah.
And even though there might have been certain things that were toned down, but it was still, they had
still their, within the spirit.
Yeah. It was still something to see. You know,
it was a few somethings to see.
I was like, I'm shocked.
One thing we did not mention, though, that I just like laughed hysterically at, it was just such a great comedy, was the Deep running out with that fucking grocery sack and the octopus in the bag with water and throwing it in.
Oh,
the car.
Yeah. I never even mentioned one of the big moments is when Annie walks in on the Deep.
Yeah.
Basically getting...
I wonder if that octopus is related to Tim. What if it's Tim's wife, dude?
Oh, Jesus. You know, I didn't even finish the sentence I was saying. I know, by the way, if one was to listen, one should go back and listen to this podcast closely. Count how many times I start to say a sentence and I never get around to finishing it. Do a shot each time because I'm aware of it. And each time, I mean, it's a good thing it's not a video cast because I wince really bad because I get really, you know, like, I don't want to be that guy. Anyway, yeah, we never get. I don't know if he's. Now, is he fucking the squid or is the squid just blowing him? I can't, or is it both? I don't know.
Of column A.
How does it work? You know, is there ink running down his legs? I'm not sure. Anyway.
Well, nonetheless, that bad boy is in a Walmart sack and headed down the highway.
So what was the scene, since we've completed the episode, what was the scene that was like your favorite in here that you were referencing?
My second favorite scene really like was obviously the mirror scene with Homelander, but the fight itself.
Yeah, okay, me too.
It was just phenomenal and so much fun to watch, and yeah, it was great.
I think though, I if I was picking my two favorites, those would be mine as well. So damn it for agreeing because I hate doing that.
Yeah.
All right, next time I'll make sure I disagree with you next time. Speaking of next time, let me get to the wrap-up here. If you have any other thoughts, feel free to pop them in after I do the little wrap-up here. If you enjoyed this podcast, because where are we now? Long one. If you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows, I don't know, like Boys, like Better Call Saul, and so many others. You can find our podcast pretty much wherever podcasts are made available. You clearly found us and if you're listening to us right now. But you can also find us in places like Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple Podcasts, and so on. Better still, you can just go to stbdpodcast.podbean.com, and you can find all 349 of our podcasts. Ooh, 350 is coming up. Is it going to be special? No. It should have been, but it won't be. Unless I decide to just do a random one-off by myself one night and put it out.
It'll be special if you're listening.
I could see myself doing that. Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram. Our handle there is Serious TV Drama, all is one word. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there, probably shouldn't say handle on both things, who cares? What is it? Oh, yeah, at STVD Podcast. That's STVD, of course, as in serious TV drama. It's not S... What the hell does she say? SDTV? Anyway. sorry. It really rankles me every time I think about it. So, podcasting agenda. We will be back, hopefully in less than a week's time, to cover the penultimate episode of Season 3 of The Boys. I don't know if they've announced the title for it yet. They probably have not. It doesn't matter. I'm sure it'll be, you know, penultimate episodes are usually really something to look forward to. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. As far as any other podcasts are concerned, I am still of the hope that I will be shepherding in a podcast about Season 3 of The Umbrella Academy. It is up in the air who my co-host might be. There are one, two, or three different possibilities. Or Scott might do it solo. I'm not going to do it solo. I need to be talking to someone for that one. I'm halfway through watching the season so far. I'm very impressed with it so far. It looks like it'll be fun to talk about. We will be getting on the Better Call Saul train comes out July 11th, so we'll be recording on the 12th. So you guys should have it on probably the Wednesday mornings of the weeks that Better Call Saul is on. They announced today that Carol Burnett is going to be on the show, mm-hmm. So we're all speculating about that. A friend to the podcast, Axel, had mentioned on our Facebook page, he was theorizing it might be Kim's mom. I had the very same thought, and I told him so. That would make a lot of sense, since we never heard what Kim's mom's name was, so that would be interesting. There is one other silly podcast idea came to me only a couple hours ago. I had mentioned on Facebook that thanks to the first episode of Season 3 of The Umbrella Academy, I was inspired to finally, at some point in the very, very near future, finally watch Footloose. I've never seen the movie Footloose. I'm a big film guy. I've probably seen more movies than most anyone else I've ever met or ever will meet. But I did not see a number of specific movies from the 80s because I was a picky motherfucker and I didn't want to see them. I chose not to see them. I just didn't want... I had no interest. Or I had very little interest. Footloose was among them. I am playing with the idea, and this probably would be a solo deal, I'm playing with the idea of doing maybe after, certainly after this, but I don't know maybe if it would have to be after Better Call Saul. Might be. Because we're not, I don't know what that we're going to do after that's over. I might do like a podcast I release once every, I don't know, couple weeks or something. Something where I would title it I Forgot the 80s. And each one would be me reacting and talking about finally seeing a movie from the 80s that I never got around to seeing. And then, you know, at the end of each one, I would tell you what the next movie was going to be if people wanted to like go watch it again themselves. I can tell you a few that I've never seen. Footloose is among them. Flashdance is another one I've never seen. Purple Rain, I've never gotten around to seeing. I know. Oh, big one now because of the sequel that's out. I never saw Top Gun. Never saw it. So, those are a few possibilities. There are one you all like always say to me, Never Ending Story. Never seen Never Ending Story.
Yeah, that's quintessential 80s.
Yeah, but I had no interest in any of these movies. Some people keep suggesting Lady Hawk to me. I'm like, oh, considering now what a bunch of people are saying, maybe I'll add that to the list. That's if these movies are all easily accessible as well. If I can't find them, then I'm not going to watch them. But I thought that might make for a fun podcasting idea. And that way I can kind of control the length of it. I would try to keep them on the shorter side. I would try to keep it under an hour. So, sorry, Gott, but I'm trying to be... because especially once Better Call Saul is over, I'm not sure what we're going to be doing.
Crying in our pillow.
Yeah. I'm feeling that we might do the occasional one-offs. There are certain TV series that we do cover, but I don't know if any of them are coming back anytime soon. I mean, they just recently announced you know, stuff about the new season of Fargo, that's probably not going to see the light of day for like another year. And this podcast might not exist at that point. I don't know. I know me and Brian are committed to doing Perry Mason whenever that comes back. I've not heard about it coming back. Watch it comes back like tomorrow. you and I doing The Boys, of course, but you know, we're finishing up this season. Who knows when the next season that's going to be?
Yeah, so, it's going to be like a 2-year hold, most likely.
And, you know, at a certain point, I'm going to be pulling the plug on this thing. So, anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there as a possible idea. If any of you like the idea, feel free to mention on the Facebook page. I know you won't. No one ever, like two people ever comment on the Facebook page. Anyway, Jamie, thank you so much for tolerating me and joining me for this podcast and getting the chance to talk about Herogasm this week.
Yeah, thanks for letting me join you in a conversation that others will be listening to that involve things like giant loads of splooge.
Right.
And once in a lifetime chance.
Right. You know, it was an episode filled with lube. I mean, fun. All right. Anyway, so good night, Jamie. Good night to everybody out there. And Jamie, you can say something at the very end before I hit the button. I never prepare you. I know. I love it.
I have nothing to say. Just wash your hands.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the COVID queen over there. All right. Good night, everybody.